You ready?
Ready?
Ready? Ready? Watch out, Frank!
Yeah.
Warning, the following podcast features views and opinions that are not representative of the collective views of the Whispers groups. Some of these views may not be suitable for children. Accordingly, the producers and hosts of the Missy AE podcast must insist that no one attempt to take anything that is being said as representative of the views of any of the Whispers groups.
Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the Missy AE podcast. Tonight, we bring to you another edition of Sports Whispers Weekly, and just when we thought that we were done with controversy-free news, nope, there's even more to talk about this week. We got a update on John Gruden, and it is a huge one. We also have a an NHL executive who has stepped away because of some sort of allegations against him. We'll talk about that. We have, of course, Odell Beckham Jr. He has a new home. We will discuss his impact on what he could bring to the LA Rams. And also, it may be quite convenient timing for him, too, for him to be joining the Rams. And before we get started, I just got to say, Texas Longhorns, you guys okay? 35-14 Kansas at the half.
Wow.
The one win Kansas Jayhawks, might I add. And this is, Lou, this is a team that was supposed to be a 31-point favorite, the Longhorns, a 31-point favorite, and they're losing at the half by 21, thanks to giving up three touchdowns in a span of 85 seconds.
Say what?
You heard me right. Three
you
touchdowns.
You did say 85 seconds, correct?
85 seconds.
Oh,
that's
God.
Correct.
Now, look, if this was a basketball matchup, naturally I would take Kansas in a heartbeat, you know, because that's a basketball school. But football, it doesn't even come close. They're pathetic.
Yeah. Yeah, this is...
They're one of the suckiest bunches of college football. Speaking of that, before you move on, I have another pathetic team that I like to mention. Because they just got a new coach, well, a new coach to them, but not a new coach to football at all. Now, we know that UConn is, of course, a powerhouse in basketball, but they are the most pathetic, worthless, putrid team in all of college football. They did name a new coach, and you would not believe who it is.
Jim Mora
you got
Jr.
It. So, all I can say this is, playoffs, you kidding me? Playoffs? Don't think we got playoffs. Yeah, that's playoffs. I feel sorry for the coach.
It's his first time returning to college football since leaving UCLA, where he had a 46-30 record during his time in UCLA.
His record was that good. Why did they fire him? I mean, it was the other way around, like 3-46. Yeah, I understand, but he has such a great record. Why did he get axed?
Well, did he get axed or did he get let go? Or did he walk away?
Said fired. They got fired.
Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, that's right. It says here, wait a minute. Hang on. Wow. Okay. Yeah. You know, I don't know why they would fire him. Let me look, actually. Let me look a little bit deeper. Let me look a little bit deeper and see. See what his record was. Well,
46-30.
I mean, let's look at it. Yeah, but let's look at it like this, though. His first 4 years, he went to four college bowls. He had a 2-2 record in the college bowls, which is, you know, fine. But then his last 2 years, he had a combined record of 9-14.
Okay. Now I get it.
And it's probably
–
that's that's probably what helped make the decision as well. Because, and this is even worse, in the conference in 2016, the second to last year, he was 2-7 in the conference.
Mm-hmm.
And his final year, he was 3-5. And this is after leading the first 3 years with a 6-3 record against the conference in his first 3 years. Then he had a 5-4 record in his last winning year with the UCLA.
I get it. He stumbled.
Yeah, it basically went downhill, essentially.
I get it. But, okay, I get the point there.
But, you know, this is a bit of a step back, though. You're going from the Pac-12 to NCAA Division I FBS.
Yeah.
I mean,
PAC conference.
And for UConn, of all teams.
Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned this, Lou, because I had this listed on my articles that I was going to bring up. But you know, during his time at UCLA, he did coach the likes of Josh Rosen, who was a washout, Colton
mm-hmm.
Miller, Takaris McKinley, Anthony Barr, who is an All Pro for the Minnesota Vikings. And Batone Jones, along with Miles Jack. So it says here that the fit at UConn is kind of interesting because even though he has spent most of his life on the West Coast in Colorado, California, and Washington, he was an NFL assistant for almost 20 years prior to being named the Falcons head coach in 2004. He was also the head coach of the Seahawks until they fired him to make way for Pete Carroll. He had spent 2 years out of football before taking the UCLA job in 2012.
Yes,
he did work. He does have some experience in Connecticut though, because he was a part-time ESPN analyst in Bristol, Connecticut.
Right, Bristol.
Yeah, and here's the thing here. UConn apparently gave him a 5-year deal that starts at $1.5 million and runs through the 2026 season, according to what it says here. And the Huskies are currently 1-8, and they haven't had a winning season since 2010.
Yeah.
And his first job, as he's already telling reporters, is to recruit, as they rank dead last out of all 130 FBS teams in the talent department right now. And supposedly he was on hand for UConn's game against Clemson today. So needless to say, he probably got a pretty good look at how daunting his task is going to be to oversee a rebuild. And as far as his experience in the NFL, I mean, you know, it was kind of subpar, 31-33. His main big season was his very first season, where he led the Atlanta Falcons to an 11-5 record and a losing to the Philadelphia Eagles in the NFC title game that year. That's pretty much his huge, you know, his huge accomplishment, I guess you could say, in the NFL. So
it is.
Other than that, there's, you know, not really much more to say about him. I mean, I think I would say I'm kind of surprised that UConn was able to get a former NFL coach. But, you know, I guess he must have been dying to get back into coaching. The fact that he would take a 5-year deal with perhaps the worst university out there in terms of record and talent.
Yes.
Now we do have another incident. according to the Seattle Times, staying in college football, the suspended head coach of Washington, of the Washington Huskies, Jimmy Lake, is now reportedly facing allegations that he shoved a player in 2019. Yeah. He's facing an allegation, per the report, he is alleged to have shoved former wide receiver Quentin Pounds during halftime of Washington's October 2019 game at Arizona. According to one eyewitness, it says here that Lake comes in on just a complete rampage, pretty much, picks up Quentin Pounds and throws him into a locker. Those lockers there were wooden lockers, and it was violent. It really caught everyone by surprise. It was really unprompted. He just kind of did that and then went on a tangent about how the offense needs to start playing better. Now, Lake has since denied the allegation when the Seattle Times reached out to him for comment on the matter. In today's game against Arizona State, now he was suspended after the loss to Oregon last week. The defensive coordinator, Bob Gregory, is serving as current acting head coach for today's game against Arizona State, but who knows if maybe perhaps this might, now that this story has come out, if there might be any sort of repercussions for Jimmy Lake. What are your thoughts on that, Lou?
Well, not a smart move. I mean, you shove a player. I mean, that is something you do not do. I mean, I know you're in charge, but, you know, there are just certain things that even though you are a coach, you do not do, and there's going to be, you know, I think he's going to have to be facing a fine. Or he did say, you did say he was suspended, right?
Well, he was suspended for something, I think, that took place last week.
Sounds like, I mean, this has this coach has a bad reputation, and you know, he's got to face some form of discipline, you know, a fine or maybe more of a suspension. So, not a good time for that. You do not shove a player,
and not just into some random locker. The lockers were wooden compared to the normal metal lockers that, you know, that football teams usually have, or universities usually have. This
right.
was into a wooden locker. But, anyways, I want to move on to the NHL, because we do have an update when it comes to Kyle Beach. In particular, involving his lawsuit against the Chicago Blackhawks, and apparently settlement talks aren't going so well between the Blackhawks and former player Kyle Beach. Beach's lawyer Susan Loggins said on Thursday that she's disgusted by the Hawks' lack of fair play with the recent handling of his lawsuit, which is the centerpiece of the sexual assault scandal that has basically rocked the hockey world this year. Just 2 weeks ago, when the Jenner and Block investigation confirmed many of the atrocious details that Beach had alleged in the lawsuit, Hawks CEO Danny Wirtz instructed team lawyers to reach a fair resolution in the lawsuit, which had been battled ferociously throughout the summer in court. And indeed, they held opening settlement talks with Loggins on November 2nd, and then follow-up talks on November 5th. But in letters that were sent by Hawks lawyers on Thursday, and they were obtained by the Chicago Sun-Times, the Hawks called Loggins' initial financial settlement demand, quote-unquote, extraordinary, saying, "It now seems clear to us that we will be unable to resolve these differences through lawyer-to-lawyer discussions alone, based on the two parties' very different views when it comes to settlement." The Hawks have requested that the two parties agree to use a third-party mediator to determine a settlement, which is their second time requesting such mediation, also having done so in a letter preceding the November 2nd talks. In the letter, the Hawks offered to pay for the mediation and to make Danny Wirtz and Chairman Rocky Wirtz present at it, or present at it. Loggins, however, remains staunchly opposed to mediation, and she said she provided her initial settlement demand at the Hawks' request, but the Hawks refused to provide their own initial settlement offer in return. Now, she declined to disclose her initial settlement demand publicly, but said it included the estimated earnings that Beach would have made over a typical NHL career had he not been allegedly assaulted as a 20-year-old prospect. The Hawks were also upset by that fact, according to Loggins. And the Hawks, in the letter, again requested a 60-day stay in new court filings, calling it their strong preference to focus on the mediation process rather than litigation. Loggins did say she's not opposed to settlement in theory, but would nonetheless prefer to proceed to the discovery stage, where she believes that evidence may surface that could suggest the Wirtz family knew about the alleged sexual assault back in 2010, something that the Jenner and Block investigation found no evidence for. She's calling the stay a stalling tactic. So now the team faces a court-mandated November 30th deadline to either support or withdraw their pending motion to dismiss the case. The deadline is in place because Loggins herself filed a new amendment complaint in the lawsuit last week. The Hawks continue to believe their legal defenses against Beach's lawsuit, which is the statute of limitations being the most prominent of those, are strong. But now they feel a moral inclination to attempt to resolve this matter on fair terms. So needless to say, Lou, it seems like this may be stalled for the foreseeable future here.
That's what I'm thinking too.
With the Hawks not believing that, you know, they should be paying Kyle Beach what he would have made over his entire NHL career, which I guess on one hand it kind of makes sense. You know, you don't really know the type of player he was going to turn out to be. So why would they give up all of this amount of money when you didn't really know, you know, how exactly he was going to turn out? And also, they believe as well that I read somewhere else where they said that they don't really believe that the sexual assault impacted his career in such a way that he would have performed a lot differently had it not taken place.
I don't know about that. I mean, you know, there's something strange about that.
I mean, you would think that right now, you know, well, not right now. I mean, obviously, you know, he's still dealing with the effects, but that he had to endure quite a bit of trauma mentally.
Oh yeah.
During that entire ordeal. So, and we know,
we know
that sometimes hockey players, if it's not a physical problem, it's a mental problem.
Right.
So honestly, you know, on one hand, I kind of agree with what the Blackhawks are saying here, that they don't believe they should give him his what he would have potentially made throughout his whole career. But at the same time, they're responsible for one of their employees, you know, taking advantage of them.
Tough situation.
A young
here,
prospect.
I think so.
A young prospect at the age of 20, you know, you would kind of think that they would at least come to some sort of number to, you know, maybe fire back a because from what it sounds like here, it sounds like they never even made a counteroffer. They never even made an offer to Beach's lawyer. All they did was essentially laugh it off, is what it sounds like here. I mean, I'm kind of phrasing it in my own way, but you know, they called her demand extraordinary, and you know, it's almost like they basically laughed it off, like saying you're not even going to get anywhere close to what we, you know, to what you're demanding here. I mean, what are your thoughts, Lou? Do you think that that Kyle Beach, you know, that the Blackhawks should essentially give what Beach could have potentially made? Because, I mean, how can you project that? How can you project the type of player Beach could have been?
Yeah, I don't think you can.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think you can.
No.
So
I mean, he's gonna feel this trauma for the rest of his life too.
I mean, that, you know, that is the thing. It is gonna affect him the rest of his life. And from all accounts, it sounds like he's still dealing with the effects of it even today.
Yes.
But I would think that something of this magnitude, or with something of this magnitude, I don't see any ground that the Blackhawks really have here.
No, neither do I. I don't really see any ground at all.
Because
I
keep in mind, going back.
Do.
No, because you know, keep in mind going back to the initial findings. They waited until after the playoffs were over to deal with the allegation.
Right.
Instead of dealing with it immediately, they didn't want to add a
which you should have done.
Yeah, you should have dealt with it immediately, but they chose not to, and they prioritized winning. They prioritized winning over, you know, over somebody's well-being.
Mm-hmm. Well-being of the players has to come first before I think about winning, you know, the championship.
So, to me, you know, it's...
Whoops.
As if, you know, the Blackhawks had any more of a black eye on them already. The way they're handling this now in the lawsuit stage, man, you know, you just lose even more respect for them. I mean, wouldn't you think that this is painting an even bigger black eye on that
big black darker picture
on their franchise?
Oh yeah, I mean, the franchise is tarnished now. You know, even, you know, after winning two other Stanley Cups after that, but you know, you should have handled it right away because the well-being of the players has to come first before anything else. On winning, you know, winning is a great thing, but you know, the mental state of the players, you know, is more important. And if you would have done that in the beginning, before you know, the postseason, you know, maybe it would have escalated to, you know, what this shit has become.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's just sad. It really is sad that the fact that, you know, they're now squabbling over this when if anything, you know, they should give a reasonable settlement. But from what it sounds like here, the organization, well, according to his attorney, the organization lacks empathy in this entire case. basically, the from what I did a little bit of digging here as we've been talking, and it says here that Loggins did research to create a range based off of career earnings that has been made by the number one pick in that NHL draft, which was Steven Stamkos, and the number 22 selection that year, which was Jordan Eberle. Now, Beach was the number 11 pick in that draft, and he never played a regular season game in the NHL because of this incident. Mm. And it says here that she chose those two players because, A, Stamkos is a star, and Eberle has been what her group considered closer to an average player. I'm sorry. Hang on a minute. I gotta look up Jordan Eberle's stats because average?
Yeah.
Average? I'm sorry, what do people consider average now in the NHL?
Yeah, that's what I
want to
know.
Because this kid, Jordan Eberle, he's put up 60-point seasons. He had a 76-point season 1 year in Edmonton. I mean, are they talking about somebody? Like, what do you consider? Let me ask you this way. What do you consider an average player in the NHL? Like, Where do they have to fall in terms of point production to consider them an average player?
Well, I think only like about 4 or 5 goals a season. Putting up low assist numbers. Average players, aren't the superstars, like in the NHL and the NBA. They're not like the Gretzky's or the Messiers and whatnot, that's a whole other level altogether. So,
but would you say a third liner would be like an average player?
Yeah, I would say like a third liner.
Okay, well here's the two stats of what each player has earned over the course of 13 to 14 years in the league so far. Stamkos has earned $103.7 million, and Eberle has earned $57.6 million. So she's using these two figures as a price that they're looking for in these settlement talks, and the fact that the Blackhawks aren't even willing to go towards 57.6 kind of tells you something.
Yeah.
That the Blackhawks just don't get the, just as she said here in this quote,
yeah,
they just don't get the gravity. It's like they're saying, just man up and forget about it, which was said to Kyle by the therapist that they hired. That is exactly what they said. So this happened to you. Just take it. It's part of life. It's your fault. Just go on and don't think about it again. This is an exact quote that she said. This is an exact quote that she said that apparently the therapist that the Blackhawks hired had said to him.
Yeah, I don't think you can do that.
I mean,
the
more and more stuff I read about this, it just seems more and more that the Blackhawks, while they may be a winning organization, or at least during that time frame they were a winning organization, they are just complete assholes that just don't have – and I'm not talking about the players. I'm talking about, management. You know, they just seem like – they sound like complete assholes that have, no sense of emotion, no sense of empathy whatsoever.
No. Most of those people in that position, they can be assholes. That's what they're known for.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. It's very unfortunate. And, with how Kyle Beach's lawyer is approaching this right now, I do not see them moving whatsoever. So if the Blackhawks are expecting them to move their price, that's not going to happen. It's clear what their minimum price is, which is the Jordan Eberle, you know, what he's earned so far this year, or not this year, throughout his whole entire career, which is around $57 million, and what Stamkos has earned, which has been 100+. So it's clear that they are not going to budge for anything below that $56 million mark.
I don't think so.
So I mean, it's from what I'm reading right now, it looks like this is probably gonna you know, go on for quite some time here.
Yeah.
But you know, speaking of mental health, Carey Price, Montreal Canadiens goaltender, he recently opened up about his decision to seek help for substance use, as he voluntarily entered the NHL and NHL Players Association Player Assistance Program back on October 7th. He said, over the last few years, I have let myself get to a very dark place, and I didn't have the tools to cope with that struggle. Last month, I made the decision to enter a residential treatment facility for substance use. Things had reached a point that I realized I needed to prioritize my health for both myself and for my family. Asking for help when you need it is what we encourage our kids to do, and it was what I needed to do. Now, Price isn't sure when he'll be able to return to play, but he's taking things day by day as he continues to work on his mental health. He did also express his appreciation for all the support from his fans and the Canadiens fans and well wishes he received, and he has currently asked for privacy at this time. You know what, Lou? Now it all of a sudden it makes sense. It makes complete sense why, you know, why he abruptly left the Canadiens like he did. And also, it also kind of makes sense why his play seemed to have dipped the past couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Now we know.
He's still been a strong goaltender, a stud goaltender. I mean, he was 12 and 7 last year. He was 27 and 25 the year before. There were a couple seasons ago, he was 16, 26 and 7. Maybe perhaps dealing with these, with depression and these mental health issues, may have potentially contributed, to some of his struggles.
I wouldn't be surprised
that he's
by
had
that
to deal with at some points. I mean, what are your thoughts, Lou?
Well, we seem to be having more of a rash of that now, with people having these athletes having these state of their mental health. I mean, it's popping up all over. It's happened, you know, in the tennis world and the golf world. It's happened, of course, to a ton of footballers. We're really seeing a lot of that now. So this wouldn't surprise me about, you know, what has happened. You know, it's just, but it seems like it's happened more within the past year that coronavirus is coming in. You know, it's causing a great deal of concern.
Yeah, you know, that's another possible thing to latch onto here. Could COVID have potentially played a little bit?
I think
of
it does
role in this. You know,
I think
as
it
far
does,
as
because
the
before
quarantine,
that it was only very sporadic. You know, now it's becoming more commonplace in the past year and a half.
You know, as a matter of fact, I've read that you know, people are concerned with the kids, for example. You know, the fact that the kids had to go through all of school last year in remote learning or hybrid learning, or hybrid, you know, hybrid learning where, you know, they would be off maybe 2 or 3 days. They would do 2 or 3 days of remote learning, and they would do 2 or 3 days of in-person learning. It's, you know, I haven't really thought about it until now because they, you know, people have talked about how the fact that, you know, kids' minds have been messed with because they haven't had a chance to see their, before schools started reopening, you know, they hadn't had a chance to see their friends because of the COVID issue. And, you know, I would have thought, you know, kids would probably be ecstatic the fact that they would, you know, they wouldn't have to, you know, go to school, that they could stay home while still, you know, obviously, you know, doing the Zoom classes and everything, attending class through Zoom, but, you know, that they could stay home and, you know, not have to deal with like bullying, for example, in schools, that would normally happen during the school year. You know, I was kind of surprised that there was so much outrage over the fact that, you know, kids are supposedly missing school, you know, missing school in terms of, oh, we want to physically be in the classroom. You know, I mean, I don't know about you, Lou, but, you know, back when I was in school, now granted, you know, I haven't been out of school as long as you have. But,
oh, thanks.
You know, back, well, I mean, you've stated multiple times, you know, on the show. But, you know, back when I was still in high school, I probably would have been ecstatic, you know, hey, I can actually, I'll still do the whole Zoom thing, but, you know, hey, I can feel comfortable, you know, sitting in my living room, not having to, you know, interact with people in school, you know, and, you know, I didn't realize it until now, the fact that, you know, COVID could very well have played a factor potentially in the depression that Carey Price has been experiencing, although he has said that it's been going on for over the past couple of years, but maybe COVID just made it even worse. You know, the fact that he had to play in front of no fans or very limited amount of fans. The fact that, you know, especially up in Canada, you have to wear masks every day. I mean, that certainly is gonna take a toll on the mental health.
Oh, absolutely.
So
kids want to be around their friends. You know, that was the main part that, you know, I think they were upset about. It's not about attending classes, being associated, you know, with their peers. I know, I would miss that.
Yeah. So it's interesting you brought up the COVID aspect of this, Lou, because now that I think about it, it's entirely possible that may have played a pretty big role, because it's much different.
I wouldn't doubt it.
You know, we've heard multiple athletes speak up about playing through the COVID era, and, you know, they've spoken about how it's much different playing in front of a crowd as opposed to not playing in front of a crowd. So, you know, maybe perhaps that is a huge aspect of this whole ordeal that Carey Price is going through right now. So, obviously, you know, hopefully he can get in a much better state of mind, not just for himself, but for his family, and also, I mean, you know, maybe Montreal kind of hopes that he kind of speeds it up a little bit too, because they're currently sitting at 4-10-1 right now on the season. They're awful this season, with a goal differential of -18. could
be
worse
with the
Coyotes.
So far.
Sure. Oh my God. 1-12-1 with a goal differential of -34. Oh my God.
You can't see me, but I'm holding up, I'm doing the loser sign.
Man, you know, maybe perhaps the decision for them to go back to the old Coyotes logo was such a bad idea.
Yes.
That it's had such a negative effect on the players as well. Wow.
I don't know about that,
I
but
was not
you
expecting
suck, you suck.
That. Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, exactly, yeah. You know, no wonder Phil Kessel, actually, is Phil Kessel still there? No, he's...
No.
Oh, he is still there. I feel bad for him. Oh, my God. No. Yeah, he is still there.
Phil, what are you doing?
So, I feel bad for Phil Kessel right now.
I feel sorry for the whole state of Arizona.
Realizing he's still a Coyote. 5 points in only 14 games this year for Phil Kessel so far.
I mean the Diamondbacks were bad enough this season, and now you got the Coyotes on top of that. Thankfully, your Cardinals are doing well. Otherwise, you'd be a triple threat of shit.
Yeah, it's. I guess things could be worse for Montreal. They could be the Coyotes, but. You know, needless to say, obviously they would very well welcome back their franchise goaltender with once Carey Price can officially get back to the right state of mind to where he can actually play.
And have a shred decency for the team.
Imagine. They have right now. You know, you got to imagine, too, how much what his mindset is currently at right now to the point of where, you know, the fact that he can't even play hockey to begin with.
Yeah. Which is a shame.
You know, hopefully it is a shame, especially considering his age, and, you know, he probably doesn't have – that much time left, you know, in the league.
Yeah.
So, you know, who knows exactly actually, let me check. I think I'm pretty sure he may be in his, I know he's in his 30s, but I think it's his mid 30s. Yeah. He's 34. He's 34 right now.
That's young.
I mean, it technically, yeah, it is young, but, you know, who knows how much more meaningful hockey, I should say, that he can play at a high level.
Oh, player, okay.
You know, that he can, that as far as that he can play at a high level.
Yeah,
you know, before his skills. Before his skill, yeah, exactly. Before his skills start to deteriorate. To where he's not the elite goaltender that fans are used to seeing.
Yes. Because,
but,
you know, when I think of, you know, 34, I mean, to me, that's young. You know.
Yeah.
I guess when you're a player that's been around for so long and getting, you know, beat up all the time, physically you're 34, but mentally you're like about 64. Sorry, not 64, but you get the idea. Yeah, you know.
Yeah. Now, we do have an update on Jack Eichel. He did undergo successful disc replacement surgery yesterday. It was described as successful and without complications, according to Eichel's doctor. He is expected to make a full recovery. And the timeline, Eichel did say a week ago that he is hoping to be recovered in 3 months. But Vegas does intend to provide updates as far as the timing of Eichel's return to the ice when they are appropriate. So, and you know, Buffalo was so concerned about the surgery, all they had to do was agree to let him have it, and there wouldn't have been any problems. And you know, maybe he would still be a Buffalo Sabre right now.
Exactly. I mean, because you were so afraid. Well, but apparently Vegas isn't, and Vegas, you know, gave him the go ahead, and that's why now he's with the Vegas Knights. And Buffalo, you lose. Although they seem to be doing better without him, though.
Yeah, but the question is for how long.
Yeah, I think by New Year's, I think they're gonna go back to their old ways and, you know, be the sucky team that they are.
Exactly. You know, I mean, right now they're not going to be a turnover
to Buffalo at all. You know, enjoy your time while you have it, because basically you're gonna fall upon the end.
Yeah, I mean, right now they're tied with Boston. They're tied with Boston right now for the fifth spot in the Atlantic Division. The only reason why they're not ahead of Boston is because Boston has played one fewer game compared to Buffalo. Buffalo is 6-5-2. Boston is 7-5. So obviously, you know, that's why, because of winning percentage, as far as to why Buffalo is not ahead of Boston right now, even though they're tied for points. And actually, let me take a look. Buffalo did lose today to Toronto 5-4. So that is obviously, you know, I think it may be sooner rather than later that we'll start to see the old Buffalo show itself. Let's see here. Now, going over to the controversy, I guess you can call it a controversy. The Anaheim Ducks, they have put general manager Bob Murray on administrative leave while they investigate allegations that have been made against him. And apparently the allegations are of improper professional conduct. And it says in a statement that has been made by the Ducks that after internal review, we enlisted Shepard Mullen to perform an independent investigation. Upon recommendation from their initial findings, we have decided to place Bob on administrative leave pending final results. So it sounds like they found something that, you know, that is of concern for the Anaheim Ducks organization here involving their general manager, Bob Murray. And considering what has come out recently in not just the NHL, but essentially all of sports, it seems like if it's not one sport, it's another. I wouldn't be shocked if there's potentially, if this is just another one of those, string of incidents.
Oh, it might be.
That has now all of a sudden come up. Murray has been working for Anaheim since 2005, and he has held the position of general manager since 2008. Now, the thing is, he has held that position for a long time. So is this something that just recently happened, or is this something that happened years ago?
I think it happened years ago.
And they're now all of a sudden just coming out about it.
Yeah, I think it happened a long time ago.
Just think about it, Lou. With all these stories that are popping up, you know, starting with the whole Washington football team story and all the dominoes that have started to fall after that, you know, you kind of wonder if maybe perhaps, you know, I mentioned last week that there's possibly more dominoes to fall. Is this another one of those dominoes, or is this a completely, you know, something aside from that?
It's a domino effect.
So
when one falls,
they
all start to fall.
If that's the case, you know, I kind of have to wonder what the hell is going to fall next.
I'm afraid to find out.
Oh, and by the way, he has officially resigned. It's not just a
smart move.
It's not just a administrative leave. He has officially resigned, and he will undergo. So apparently it is alcohol issues. That's what this investigation is. Apparently, he has resigned, and he will enroll in a alcohol abuse program, according to the New York Post. It says here, and actually the team announced it. The Anaheim Ducks announced on Wednesday. And the Ducks owner, Henry Samueli, will reportedly pay for Murray's rehabilitation services, according to ESPN. They expressed full support of Murray's efforts to seek help and in order to improve his physical and mental health. So, you know, you kind of have to wonder if, you know, this, these accusations of improper professional conduct, did it have to do with alcohol? It must have to do with alcohol.
Yeah, I'm a big part of it.
If he's, you know, if he's all of a sudden undergoing a alcohol rehabilitation program.
Yes.
And it says here his behavior has fostered a reported abuse culture within the Anaheim organization. Now, the specific details of the abuse and misconduct were not shared with the media. He said in the statement that was released by the team's news release on Wednesday, he stated, "I want to apologize to anyone adversely affected by my behavior. I vow to make changes to my life, starting with enrolling in a treatment program. I want to thank Henry and Susan Samueli and Michael Shulman, as working for them has been one of the highlights of my career. As I step away from the Ducks, I will focus my attention on where it should be, improving my life for the betterment of my family and friends." And the NHL has said it supports Murray's decision to resign from his position. The league, in a statement, said, "While we understand that he is seeking appropriate counseling and treatment for his personal issues, there is no excuse and there is no place in our league for the type of behavior that was recently reported through the NHL hotline. We thank the Ducks organization for his prompt and appropriate response to the hotline reports. The league and its clubs are committed to a safe and welcoming workplace across the NHL, and it will continue to take any and all action to achieve that goal." This kind of screams to me that maybe it might have been sexual harassment when I think about it.
I wouldn't doubt it.
He was probably drunk. And there was possibly some sort of sexual harassment that took place, whether it was in his office, on team grounds, wherever, with either a male or a female employee, you know. And it was just recently reported to whoever it was reported to. But now that I think of it, Lou, it really makes sense now. And
yes.
I agree with what you said. It was a smart move on his decision and on the Ducks' decision for him to resign as general manager.
Yes.
Because you don't need – sort of like what we're seeing with the Blackhawks right now. You don't need that type of, you know, that type of how do I put it, distraction for their hockey club. I mean, you look at Anaheim right now, they're second in the Pacific Division right now. The last thing they need is their players to be distracted by things other than hockey.
Yeah.
Which you got to think that they would probably get asked about this. They would probably get asked about this in interviews or whatnot. So, I don't know. You know, obviously, he is seeking help, so that's good news. But
it is.
You know, it's another one. It's another one bites the dust, and who knows who's going to fall next.
There's going to be more of them, that's for sure.
Speaking of which, let's dive into the NFL. Because, oh, actually, no, wait a minute. Before we do that, let me go back to, hopefully I can find the report. Because there was, we know how there's been those, those problems having to deal with NBA teams, right?
Right.
Well, apparently, okay, yeah, here we go. The president of the Portland Trailblazers has reportedly resigned. Chris McGowan has reportedly resigned from his position as Trailblazers president. And supposedly he has said that this is separate from the Neil Olshey investigation. And apparently it was several months in the making, McGowan has said, and entirely separate from the Blazers investigation into Olshey. McGowan was originally hired by Microsoft's co-founder, Paul Allen, and reported to Jody Allen, who ended up inheriting control of the team following Paul Allen's death. Dwayne Hankins, who previously served as the chief commercial officer of the Portland Trailblazers, will reportedly replace McGowan as president. It says here that he wants to pursue other opportunities after being with the Trailblazers for 10 years, and the only way he can do that is if he resigns and moves on. He says, my contract was coming up, so it was either that or we're going to be negotiating a new contract extension. I felt that my head wasn't 100% in moving ahead and being here longer. The window of opportunity where I can have those conversations with Jody about the future is right now. It had just felt like the right time for me. So he currently departs at a very tenuous time for the Trailblazers. So, you know, as we mentioned last week, not only is there an investigation going on into Neil Olshey,
yes,
but also the fact that they hired Chauncey Billups in June, which prompted backlash in light of his of the allegation of sexual assault from 1997 against him. And subsequent reporting had revealed that the Blazers had not contacted his accuser as part of their vetting process and that the organization had cut ties with a private investigator involved in the Billups investigation after it was revealed that he had shared pornographic material on Twitter. And also, not to mention last month, the Blazers placed assistant coach Milt Palacio, a new member of Billups' staff, on leave after federal prosecutors had charged him and 17 other former NBA players with defrauding the league's retirement health care plan. So, not to mention that Portland's coaching search process was one of several tension points with franchise star Damian Lillard, who also expressed dissatisfaction with Portland's ability to improve its roster under Olshey. Now with, you know, with their president now resigning, and there's so much, you know, there's so many problems right now going on with Portland. You know, it kind of makes you wonder.
Yeah.
Could we potentially see, you know, what's his name, Damian Lillard, end up requesting a trade with so much uncertainty?
Yeah, I think
right
very
now,
well
surrounding with so much uncertainty surrounding the future of the Portland Trailblazers organization as a whole.
I wouldn't be surprised by that at all. But I think he is going to request a trade.
I mean, it also doesn't help either that, you know, now
no.
you have the guy who is supposed to be, you know, the team president. He's supposed to be the guy who is in control of all the operations. And now all of a sudden you have somebody else taking the reins. Now, this might be a good thing. This might be a bad thing as well, because maybe this new guy can sort of help a little bit better with Damian Lillard and his frustrations that he's had with the team. Who knows? But you know, in such a tumultuous time for Portland, it doesn't help that your lead executive is gone amidst all this. But you know what? Let's go into the NFL, as we have, well, I mean, let's face it, we have quite the amount of stuff to talk about here.
Yeah.
And why don't we start with John Gruden sticking up the gigantic middle finger to the NFL and Roger Goodell, as he has officially sued both the NFL and Roger Goodell for defamation of character. It says here in a statement that has been made, through a malicious and orchestrated campaign, the NFL and Commissioner Roger Goodell sought to destroy the career and reputation of John Gruden, the former head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders. The lawsuit that was filed on Thursday in Clark County District Court had stated. Gruden's lawyers also wrote in the 21-page complaint that the former coach was forced to resign after the defendants ratcheted up the pressure by intimating that further documents would become public if Gruden was not fired. So, for those who don't remember, the only reason that John Gruden's emails became available was because that they were included in the investigation into the Washington football team. An investigation which, apart from the John Gruden emails, nothing else has come out from it. So you kind of have to wonder, Lou, was John Gruden potentially a victim of targeting by the NFL? The fact that they haven't released anything else involving the findings of the football team, like, they haven't even released whether or not, you know, Snyder was innocent or not in the allegations that have been made against him. You know, they haven't released anything. The only thing that's been made known is anything involving John Gruden, involving the racist comments and the sexist comments and stuff like that. Those are literally the only things that have been made known throughout this whole entire ordeal.
Yeah, he might be playing the victim here.
Well, you could say he's playing the victim, but keep in mind, there are 650,000 emails. And you mean to tell me that, you know, you mean to tell me that John Gruden somebody who isn't even with the organization and has never been with the Washington football team organization is the only meaningful thing to come out of that investigation. And the fact that Goodell claimed that he felt that Snyder had, quote unquote, learned his lesson, supposedly, without even releasing any of the findings. I mean, to me, Lou, that seems kind of suspicious. And
yeah, it does.
The fact that they tried to intimidate the Oakland or the Vegas Raiders too by saying that more information would be leaked if they didn't fire John Gruden. And let's keep in mind, John Gruden has said that he loves and adores the Raiders. So this isn't on the Raiders. This is on Goodell and the NFL as a whole, this whole ordeal. So
yeah, but how do you sue someone to measure character when he doesn't have any character?
True, but at the same time, you know, I can see the case he's making here. The fact that they have refused to, you know, normally when there's an independent investigation, normally everything is released. All of the findings, whether they're good or whether they're bad, you know, whether there's nothing to really report on or not, usually findings are released. And the fact that there's literally nothing to come out of this except for a couple of emails from involving John Gruden. I mean, to me, that kind of seems like targeting.
I think it is a definition of targeting right there, so I wouldn't be surprised by that. But how can you find nothing? There's got to be something. I think there's something that's more than there is to be believed here. I think there is something more there.
Yeah, it's probably a cover-up.
Oh, hell yeah.
I mean, the fact that they didn't, they didn't release anything on the team,
yeah.
And the only thing that they've really even, taken out of that whole thing is the fact that John Gruden said a couple of things when he wasn't even employed by any NFL team. I mean, why release stuff like that to the media?
Right.
When he wasn't even with the team at the time, unless you're trying to do what he's calling character assassination. And it is his best claim, because when you think of it, if the supposedly secret Washington football team investigation emails had been kept secret, if the NFL had sent them to Davis, to Mark Davis and Mark Davis only, Davis quite possibly wouldn't have fired Gruden.
Right.
And it would actually be helpful to Gruden if Davis eventually admits that in open court. And
I don't know what
it says that it, you know, it says that if the league had not leaked the emails to the media, Gruden arguably could have continued to coach the Vegas Raiders.
Yes.
Also, Gruden, in his second count that he is suing the NFL over, he alleges that the NFL and Goodell tortuously interfered with his future economic interests. Basically, he claims that leaking the emails necessarily dissuades others from ever doing business with him moving forward. And also, this claim potentially encompasses the contract that Gruden may have signed with the Raiders beyond his 10-year, $100 million deal. The third count that he is suing under alleges negligence. Alleges negligence generally against the NFL and Goodell. This potentially becomes the primary fallback argument to the notion that the league or Goodell deliberately leaked the emails. although the negligence count reiterates the contention that the emails were selectively leaked. Gruden claims that the NFL had a duty to safeguard the Washington football team emails and that the league failed to exercise reasonable care to prevent the documents from getting out. Now, the league can insist all that it wants that it didn't deliberately leak the Gruden emails, but the truth is that something happened to result in the Gruden emails making their way out from behind, from behind the magic wall, if you want to put it that way. Someone mishandled them. Someone leaked them. Someone allowed them to be put in a position that resulted in the documents being leaked. So basically, there's a doctrine in the law that's known as res ipsa loquitur, which is Latin for the thing speaks for itself, which essentially it means that, you know, in certain cases, the mere occurrence becomes proof that negligence occurred. So in this case, the NFL's stubborn insistence that nothing from the investigation would be disclosed, coupled with the fact that a handful of pages were provided to the media, suggests that something screwy had transpired.
I'm surprised on that at all.
The fourth claim, or I'm sorry, not the fourth, the fifth claim, or I'm sorry, it is the fourth claim, but the fourth and fifth claims are reportedly intertwined with each other. The fourth claim alleges negligent hiring by the league. The argument boils down to a claim that the league entrusted these sensitive matters to people who failed to protect them. This dovetails with the fifth claim that the NFL negligently supervised the employees responsible for handling the sensitive information. The sixth claim in the lawsuit accuses the NFL and Goodell of engaging in a civil conspiracy to engineer Gruden's forced resignation. So basically, in other words, Gruden contends that multiple people came together and planned to take him out. Now, whether the evidence will support Gruden's various claims depends on the documents and testimony that will be developed during the discovery process. Through it all, though, one fact is deniable. Confidential emails that the league had collected and selected for submission to the Raiders ended up escaping the league's custody, and it ended up ending Gruden's NFL coaching career. So, I mean, it makes sense for Gruden to aggressively pursue how it happened. Yeah. Even though he got what he deserved for the emails, it doesn't give the NFL a license to selectively weaponize a few of the pages while concealing the rest of them. So, this could potentially, A, be disastrous for the NFL.
Yes.
But B, it may also potentially expose plenty of things that the league would prefer to keep secret. But also, you know, this could be a gigantic black eye on the sport, and maybe perhaps we may also get to see just exactly what was in those emails as well, in regards to the Washington football team. I mean, what are your thoughts?
It has to come out at some point later. It's got to come out.
Yeah, I mean, Lou, do you think that this could be potentially disastrous for the NFL and for Roger Goodell? The fact that once they go into discovery, anything can literally come out of this.
Oh yeah, I mean Goodell, I think is going to be, you know, it's going to be in a major trouble. I don't know if the NFL is going to be under, you know, a major trouble. I mean, they are the NFL after all, and they are a powerful, you know, team. They're a powerful union. So I don't see anything, of a complete collapse. But Goodell, he's going to be in deep shit.
Yeah, I mean, let me just put it this way. You know, the NFL, you know, they're not in any, they're not in any potential trouble of disbanding or something. I'm not talking about that, but you know,
yeah.
it could be something to where, you know, it's a major black eye for the sport, and you know,
well,
maybe we might this. Maybe this might cause the NFL to find a new commissioner, perhaps. If this was potentially a Goodell decision. And also another thing to keep in mind too, you know, they're trying to be, you know, they have all these deals with endorsements and everything. And
yes.
they just had signed a deal exclusively for betting, to be a betting partner for different betting organizations. So another thing you got to keep in mind here is, could the NFL potentially have something going on underneath the table? You know, in turn, we may potentially find out if
yeah.
games are potentially being fixed.
Yeah, I mean, that is kind of a concern. And I think that might be a trend that some games that I think could be fixed.
Because, you know, obviously, let's put it this way. Obviously, it's up to the players on the field, you know, to ultimately get the job done and win or lose. You know, further investigation, if the NFL ends up coming under investigation here, there could be stuff that could be revealed. Like, for example, involving the referees, you know, with all the bad calls that have happened and the use of replay and everything. There's a lot of stuff that could potentially get uncovered that the NFL
yes.
wants to keep secret.
Yeah. Eventually, I think it's going to come out. I mean, with the call that the rest of the, you know, there is, I think, some of the conspiracy here.
Yeah. And, you know, all of this could have been kept secret if Gruden was never fired. Or not fired, but he ended up resigning. But let's face it, he would have probably
right.
been fired by the Raiders.
Oh, no question.
So, I mean, obviously, you know, the likely scenario here is he will probably enter a settlement with the NFL, more than likely. You know, who knows? Who knows what else may potentially come about, you know, if they do end up deciding to go through court in this. Because let's keep in mind here, I highly doubt he'll settle with the NFL because, let's face it, his NFL career is over after the emails that had leaked out and everything. His
right.
NFL career is over. So wouldn't you think he's probably going to want to do as much damage as possible to the league
Absolutely.
before officially leaving? So,
yes.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be settling with the NFL at any point in time.
No.
So this could get ugly very quickly. And, you know, Pro Football Talk, they actually warned that something like this could potentially happen. In terms of you know, some of the stuff that maybe Roger Goodell and the league could potentially, you know, could potentially be trying to hide and sweep under the rug.
That wouldn't surprise me.
And actually, it says here, you know, that, well, actually, no, I actually just read all this. Pro Football Talk just basically reposted everything that I had read on the air here. But, you know, needless to say, this is obviously going to be a very long-term issue, and you know, who knows how long this may go on for.
It could go on for quite a while.
Possibly. I wouldn't doubt it. Man, you know, like I said, just when we thought that there was going to be an end to the controversies for once. Nope.
No.
Now we go over to the LA Rams, as they have agreed to terms with wide receiver Odell Beckham Jr. following his release from the Cleveland Browns. Supposedly, his deal is a one-year deal worth about $1.25 million guaranteed. However, the deal does include another $3 million in team-based incentives based on how the Rams finish the regular season and the postseason. So it could be worth up to $4.25 million total. And this couldn't have come, honestly, at a better time for the Rams, especially considering Robert Woods tore his ACL in practice yesterday. Immediately, following that deal. So if anything, Odell Beckham is probably going to slot in as the number two wide receiver now on this LA Rams offense. And he's going from a run first attack in this move. He's going from a run first attack to a pass obsessed offense, getting a major upgrade at quarterback as well. Replacing having to catch passes from Baker Mayfield to having to catch passes from Matthew Stafford, which, let's face it, it is an upgrade. And also, all in all, he's playing in a more explosive offense than the one he left in Cleveland. And basically, it's not to put a ding on Kevin Stefanski's excellent system, but If you want to be a wide receiver, you want to be in Sean McVay's system when it comes to offense. Now, obviously, Beckham's arrival does return Van Jefferson down to the bottom of the barrel when it comes to wide receivers. That probably leaves Tyler Higbee as more of a second tight end rather than a first tight end in terms of fantasy prospects. It does say it is currently unclear if Beckham will be active for Monday evening's game against the 49ers. But the extra day to get up to speed on the Rams playbook greatly enhances the odds that he may potentially be out there for the game. So what are your thoughts on this deal, Lou? Because the Rams have seemingly been going all in this year for the Super Bowl, especially with the excellent start that they've been off to.
Right.
And now all of a sudden, before Woods' injury, their offense was good enough to begin with, but now they add Odell Beckham Jr.
Oh dear.
I mean, if he can, granted he's been subpar since he was a member of the Cleveland Browns, but if he can get anywhere close to the type of player that he once was with the New York Giants,
but he's not the player he once was. I mean, he had a great first year, but since then he hasn't really done much. And he's in all kinds of trouble and doing these ridiculous online videos and whatnot. This is not the same old Odell Beckham that was honestly becoming a superstar in his first year of existence, his first year of the league.
So do you think that maybe perhaps this is, well, how should I put this? That this is quite the overhyped signing?
It's very overhyped.
It's quite... that it's quite the overhyped signing of Odell Beckham Jr. when really the one thing he's really ever known for is making that one-handed catch as a New York Giant.
Yeah. How quickly, you know, how he rose and how quickly he fell after that. I mean, really.
I mean, yeah, you take a look at his career stats. His first 3 years in the league, he averaged around 11 to 12 touchdowns per season.
Right.
His first 3 years in the league. Then his final 2 years with the Giants, he had 9 touchdowns total, three touchdowns in an injury-shortened 2017 season, and 6 touchdowns in another injury-shortened 2018 season. Then his first year in Cleveland, he had 4 touchdowns. He had 3 touchdowns in a injury or in a shortened 2020 season, and through 6 games this year, he had no touchdowns. And he was basically told by Kevin Stefanski to just stay home.
Yeah, that's what he should have done. What happened? I mean, you know, he has really fallen off the deep end.
Yeah, he has. So I think the question is it the quarterback or is it the player himself? Because, you know, it's one thing to be able to make the catches. It's another thing to be able to have a quarterback that can get you that ball in order to make those catches. Keep in mind the first couple of years of his career, when did Daniel Jones officially take over?
Jones took over in not that long ago. I think it was either 2020 or 2019. Not that long ago.
Okay, so in that case, wait,
yeah,
let
yeah.
me see. 20. Wait, was Eli still the quarterback when they got Saquon Barkley?
Yes.
Okay, so yeah, it was 2019 or 2020, which Odell Beckham Jr. was already gone anyways. But you know, you go from catching passes from Eli Manning to catching passes from Baker Mayfield. You know, it's a significant step down. Even though, you know, all the jokes that have been made about Eli Manning later on in his career, you know, in his final season with Eli Manning, he caught 6 touchdown passes from Eli. So, you know, the closest he ever got with Baker Mayfield was his very first season when he caught 4 touchdown passes. And that was 2 years ago. Now you bring in somebody, you pair him up with somebody like Matthew Stafford, who is, and keep in mind, this is a pass heavy offense as opposed to the run heavy offense, as opposed to the run heavy offense that he dealt with in Cleveland. You know, with them having Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt out there, which, by the way, neither will play tomorrow against the Patriots because Nick Chubb is currently still in COVID protocol, and I believe Kareem Hunt is still on injured reserve. Also, Felton will not be able to play due to COVID. But that's beside the point. You know, the fact is that Odell Beckham Jr., he's dealing with a much better situation offensively out in L.A., in my opinion, than he did out in Cleveland. Because he was complaining in Cleveland about how he wasn't getting enough looks his way, which, I mean, honestly, If we look through 6 games, he's only had 17 catches for 232 yards, an average about 13.6 yards per play. And he had also 2 rushing attempts also for 14 yards. So it seems like he hasn't real he wasn't really given the opportunity to really do much this year. So maybe perhaps, you know, being inserted into a pass heavy offense, especially now with Robert Woods going down, so he's going to be the number two option. You know,
yes.
Maybe perhaps we'll start to see more of, it'll be interesting to see if we see more of the old Odell Beckham Jr. The New York Times Odell Beckham Jr.
I don't think he'll ever be the only one he was.
Because, I'm not saying he would be, he would go back to being the 10, you know, the 10 touchdown a season Odell Beckham, but, you know, we could at least see, like, you know, maybe 6 touchdowns, you know, at least see more production out of him, get him, give him the opportunity to make more plays as opposed to, you know, as opposed to what he was getting out in Cleveland. But, you know, needless to say, it does look like there's definitely, it looks like the LA Rams are definitely going all in with this season so far. What are your thoughts, Lou, on the signing of Odell Beckham for LA? You know, do you think that this could potentially, I mean, LA is already a contender to begin with, but do you think this could potentially move the needle at all when it comes to where they stand as far as contention goes?
I don't think it's going to really change anything much at all. I mean, the Rams are still contending. You know, if he can get his act together, you know, maybe there's hope in, you know, maybe take the division one up. But he really has, you know, because he can also be, you know, a cancer like he became for the Giants. You know, first season he was great, but then after that he just became, you know, became a joke. So, you know, I'm just hoping that he doesn't, you know, and then, of course, the Browns. So he's, you know, he's falling in, you know, in a destructive path, career-wise.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah.
He can either help the Rams, or he could be, you know, their biggest curse. Because he's been playing like an idiot anyway.
That's exactly the same thing that Tim that runs the sports or the games Gridiron. Game every week. That's the exact same sentiment
yeah.
he told me, that he believes this could potentially, that he thinks this could potentially be, he could potentially be their curse as opposed to being a help.
Right.
Oh, this is a big play here. Arkansas and LSU, 4th and 1, but there is a flag. It looked like Arkansas maybe had gotten through for the first down, that they had stretched it out, but that is not good.
Nope.
It now goes from a 4th and 1 to now a 4th and I think illegal formation's what, 5 yards? 4th and 1 to now a 4th and 6. So now Arkansas is probably going to have to punt it.
Well, this is my stupid moment of the week.
But, anyways, you know, regardless, there's always the possibility that, you know, maybe this backfires on LA. But as far as able bodies, you know, they definitely need it now, especially with the fact that, you know, with the fact that Robert Woods is now out for the year with a torn ACL. Speaking of torn ACLs, Matt Paradis, former Super Bowl champion with the Denver Broncos during Super Bowl 50, he suffered a torn ACL in the loss for the Panthers last week against the New England Patriots. He will miss the remainder of this season with the injury, as
yes.
he was placed on season-ending injured reserve earlier this week. He is also joined by left tackle Cam Irving, who suffered a calf injury in the same game as well, though that injury is not considered to be season-ending as far as Irving goes. But that's not the big Carolina Panthers story to talk about. The big Carolina Panthers story to talk about is that the Panthers have officially reunited with Cam Newton on a one-year, $10 million contract with $4.5 million guaranteed. And it begs to wonder, how desperate must you be to give a quarterback $10 million to play 9 games?
You'll be very desperate. But my co-host is happy, so...
For reference, his last deal with the Patriots only included $1.5 million in guarantees.
Right.
And they clearly feel that Newton is a much better option as a starter than PJ Walker, who is currently the backup. As Sam Darnold, he is done for the year, or close to the whole year, with an injury that he's dealing with as well, as he was placed on injured reserve. I forget what they said exactly the injury was. It's a fractured scapula, it says.
Fractured.
That reportedly he's...
Right.
Yeah, a fractured scapula, it says. That's what he's been playing with the past couple of weeks.
Yes.
Which, as far as the scapula goes, that's basically the doctor term for shoulder blade. So basically, he has a fractured shoulder blade, essentially.
Yeah, why can't they just use regular words instead of using all the Latin terms all the time? Jeez.
Well, I didn't know about that until I looked it up right now, actually.
Yeah, I know. Well, that was in the report earlier, but I mean, you know, if it's a shoulder injury, just say shoulder injury for the rest of us, so we have to look stupid.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I literally had to look it up just now to try and figure out what a scapula is, but.
Yeah.
You know, I almost kind of have to wonder if them bringing in Newton sort of takes away from Christian McCaffrey's value, because normally they haven't dealt with heavy run quarterbacks since Newton was originally with the team, and you know, McCaffrey has been such a huge star.
Yes.
For the Panthers, that you know they've never had to have a quarterback who was primarily a runner, but now with Newton coming back, I mean let's face it, based off of what we saw with him with the Patriots, running is probably his best attribute. So. Do you think that perhaps Newton, bringing back Newton, this may potentially have an effect on Christian McCaffrey?
Well, I think it would. I think McCaffrey's going to be pretty ticked off. I mean, there's not going to be. I don't think there'll be room for two of them. I think he's going. I think there's going to be some. There's going to be some pretty bad blood here with this. Oh boy.
I mean, it's definitely, you know, it's definitely possible we could see McCaffrey's value sort of take a dip a little bit, especially if Newton decides he wants to take things into his own hands. Yeah, especially if Newton decides, you know, that he wants to take things into his own hands.
Yeah.
Now, the Raiders... you know, going back to the Raiders for a little bit here, they waived cornerback Damon Arnette earlier this week after a video of him flashing multiple firearms and verbally threatening someone surfaced last week, which basically spurred the former number 19 overall pick's release here. Arnette also reportedly crashed four rental cars within roughly a month, at which point we can assume he was banned from renting cars in the state of Nevada. So now, without
he banned permanently.
Paired with Henry Ruggs' recent release, the Raiders are now without both of the first round picks that they made in 2020. And Arnette failed to make much of an impact in a season and a half. He only appeared in four games this year before suffering a groin injury that sent him to injured reserve. He ended up breaking up one pass, and he logged four combined tackles in each of those four non-starts. So that's, you know, that's just another issue that the Raiders have had to deal with this year.
Yes.
Good news for the Seattle Seahawks. Russell Wilson has reportedly been cleared to play in this week's matchup against the Green Bay Packers, which also another good news for the Packers. Aaron Rodgers was officially activated off of the COVID-19/reserve list this week.
Oh, you mean the liar.
Now, the doctor who performed Wilson's surgery last month gave the all clear for Wilson to return this week. And at 3-5, Wilson and the Seahawks will have to win at least seven of their final nine games in order to ensure that they make the playoffs. Well, obviously his return is good news for both DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. Which, obviously, they have monster numbers with Wilson as opposed to Geno Smith. However, though, it says the Seahawks could lean heavily on the run against the run funnel Green Bay defense this week. Now, Aaron Rodgers, you know, going back to what you said, you think he's a liar with the whole COVID situation.
Yes,
that he that, you know, we obviously discussed last week. I mean, let's face it, Green Bay is better off with Aaron Rodgers than without Aaron Rodgers, because we saw what they did with Jordan Love last week.
A disaster in the making.
Let's just face it. Jordan Love is not the answer to life after Aaron Rodgers. They're going to have to come up with some other – they're going to have to come up with some other solution, because there is no way that they are winning with Jordan Love after this season. If Aaron Rodgers decides to leave.
I think he will leave, though, after this season.
You do?
I think this is going to be it. You know,
it doesn't surprise me.
No. Nobody should be surprised by this.
It doesn't surprise me, considering his, considering his tumultuous relationship that he has with their general manager. So, I would not be shocked at all if Rodgers ends up seeking to play elsewhere.
I was thinking he was going to call it quits.
Oh, you think he'll retire as a whole?
I do.
Well, you know, I guess maybe I could see that. I could kind of see that. You know, considering where he is right now at this point in his career. I mean, he's what? 37, I think.
Yeah.
So maybe he would have a few more years And, you know, who knows? When it comes to the whole COVID issue, assuming COVID is going to stick around for the foreseeable future, you know,
yes.
Rodgers, we all know Rodgers' stance on COVID and the fact that he lied about being vaccinated.
That's right.
You know, who knows if who knows exactly what's going to happen when it comes to him moving forward.
Yeah.
ESPN's Adam Schefter has reported that Vikings running back Dalvin Cook is reportedly the victim of domestic abuse and extortion, and there is pending litigation, apparently, involving Cook. Which, let me bring up a little bit more about this. Supposedly, he has been accused of assault by his former girlfriend. He's been accused of assault, battery, and false imprisonment related to an altercation that allegedly occurred at his Minnesota home nearly a year ago, to which Cook claimed on Wednesday that he was the one who was assaulted. Cook's former girlfriend, Gracelyn Trimble, accuses him of intentionally striking her multiple times in November of 2020, which caused her pain and suffering, mental anguish, humiliation, and injuries which include a concussion, lacerations, bruising, and scarring, according to a lawsuit that was filed on Tuesday. Trimble, who is a U.S. Army Sergeant First Class living in Texas, flew to Minnesota to retrieve her belongings from his residence after learning of further infidelity in Cook's part, according to the lawsuit that was filed in DeKalb County District Court. She entered through Cook's garage and grabbed a mace she stored there to defend herself as she feared what Cook may do as she packed her items up, the lawsuit states. Trimble went to the living room where Cook and two other people were and asked Cook to help her get her belongings. Cook reportedly grew angry, grabbed her arm, and slung her whole body over the couch, slamming her face into the coffee table and causing her lower forehead and the bridge of her nose to bust open and start gushing blood, the lawsuit says. Trimble attempted to point the mace towards Cook to defend herself, but was unsuccessful due to his overpowering strength. Instead, the mace primarily sprayed into Trimble's eyes, it says here. And there were several pictures of a bruised and injured Trimble that were included in the lawsuit. They were included as exhibits. Also, according to the lawsuit, Cook reportedly threatened to kill her while pointing a gun at her head, and that Trimble was confined when Cook picked her up and refused to let her leave. Trimble is seeking monetary damages in excess of $50,000. However, the actual number was supposedly $500,000.
Surprise me.
Now, according to his agent, Dalvin Cook is supposedly the victim. As Cook said that the truth and the details about the situation will come out at a further time, I got my head up high knowing the truth will come out. Cook's agent, Zach Hiller, said he is adamant that Dalvin is the victim here and did nothing wrong. According to his attorney, David Valentini, Trimble allegedly broke into Cook's home, assaulted him and two others, and is attempting to extort him for millions of dollars. Sergeant Trimble unlawfully and without the consent or knowledge of Mr. Cook entered his residence in Invergrove Heights, according to Valentini, that he said in a statement to CNN. Sergeant Trimble gained entry into Mr. Cook's residence with a stolen garage door opener. Upon entry into the residence, Sergeant Trimble immediately and without provocation physically assaulted Mr. Cook, punched him repeatedly, and maced him in the eyes, directly in the eyes, and then maced his two house guests. Valentini added that Trimble used a gun to force Cook and his guests to remain in his residence for several hours. During this hostage situation, Sergeant Trimble tried to again assault a female guest of Mr. Cook, and when Mr. Cook tried to stop the attack, Sergeant Trimble was knocked to the ground and suffered a small cut above her nose. These facts are reportedly confirmed by at least two independent witnesses. The NFL has said in a statement that it will review the matter under its personal conduct policy. They have said that we will continue to monitor developments, but there is no change to his status. And the Vikings are currently aware of the ongoing dispute between the parties, the team told CNN in a statement. And they said, upon learning of this, we immediately notified the NFL. We are in the process of gathering more information and will withhold further comment at this time. And since this is a civil complaint, per league policy, Cook will not be placed on the commissioner's exempt list. Though that wouldn't really make much sense anyways, considering they haven't even placed Deshaun Watson on the exempt list yet. Cook did say that he has not been in contact with the league. He is expecting to be in the lineup tomorrow when the Vikings play the Chargers in L.A. So, I mean, we do have JP joining us, so I'm going to get JB's thoughts on this. I'm going to get JB's thoughts on this in a few minutes, but let's start with you, Lou. What do you think of this whole incident? Because it seems like there's two conflicting stories. Trimble.
Yeah, there are.
Cook's former girlfriend is claiming that he's the one who struck her multiple times. And I have seen the photos, and by the way, she did look completely fucked up, like as if somebody swings at her.
Well, that's the thing. Mostly in these cases, you know, it usually is winding up, you know, with, you know, the guy being the girlfriend, and she looks a mess and did the physical damage to her. So I'm sure it's probably going to go that way again. I mean, that's how it usually happens.
And yet, on Dalvin Cook's side, supposedly they have two witnesses that were involved in the altercation who are claiming that he is innocent and that they were actually held hostage by Sergeant Trimble. So, I mean, Lou, what are your thoughts on this? You know, who do you think is in the wrong here?
Well, I think he's in the wrong, you know, being of his girlfriend, or not, you know, that's what he shouldn't even do anyway. So, yeah, it's gotta be on him.
But when you take it from Dalvin's account, it sounds like he did it in self-defense.
Well, that's usually, their alibi. They always say it was in self-defense. But nevertheless, you physically abused them. So what else they going to do? Of course, they're going to try to defend themselves.
True. But, I mean, the fact that she supposedly had held them at gunpoint and also supposedly had mace and that her injuries were basically a result of the scuffle that they had gotten into during this whole thing. When she began to, according to Dalvin Cook's attorney, Sergeant Trimble had tried to again assault a female guest of Mr. Cook, and when Mr. Cook tried to stop the attack, Trimble was knocked to the ground and suffered a small cut above her nose. And that those facts were supposedly confirmed by at least two independent witnesses. So, I don't know. It's so hard to determine because
it is.
You know, the way that it was the way that it was originally reported, and Adam Schefter was the first one to report this, Adam Schefter had reported it as if he was the victim of extortion and assault. And also the fact that she's seeking at the very least, I mean, the CNN article says $50,000, but according to, I forget if it was Ian Rappaport or something, one of the main football reporters said that the actual number is $500,000, in excess of $500,000.
I think it's probably JB,
let's bring you in on this. What are your thoughts? You know, just based off of what you've heard, who do you think is potentially telling the truth here involving Minnesota star running back Dalvin Cook?
You know, stuff like this, it's like who do you believe? It's been going on and going on. These players say, well, you know, it wasn't really how it came out. And even though his, girlfriend has, scars on her face and everything like that from this incident, you don't know if she was, and I don't mean this in I don't know how to explain it, but, you know, she might have been one to, how can I say it? I don't want to say instigate it, but you got to know that she was one that was yelling and screaming at this guy afterwards. Yeah. And supposedly what I'm reading on the ESPN site was that she flew to Minnesota to break up with Cook and get her belongings from the house. And then things allegedly turned violent. So you don't know who said what to who first, even though talking and saying words really shouldn't cause you to, you know, hit a woman or a woman hitting a guy. But
yeah, nobody ever talks about that, do they?
Yeah, it happens.
Yeah, I know, but it barely gets noticed.
Yeah. And you know, we don't know who said what to whom. And, you know, we don't know who, hit who first. If that's somebody hit somebody first. We don't know that.
The fact that this is supposedly that his side of the story is supposedly backed up by two independent witnesses. You know, to the whole situation. I mean,
that right there tells me that this will go to court, and we will find out who these independent witnesses,
quote, independent witnesses,
are. At the time of the, the trial. if it does come to trial.
Yeah.
I think it will.
By the way, speaking of trial, do you think it will go to trial, or do you think it'll end up being settled?
I think it'll end up being settled myself. Whoa.
Oh, we got a final. Arkansas 16, LSU 13 in overtime.
In overtime. I just saw that.
Arkansas improves to 7-3 after a very crucial interception. A very crucial interception for
okay, at least the result is for Arkansas. Not like that 9 overtime game that happened a few weeks ago. Oh, that was ridiculous.
But it's Arkansas's first win against LSU since 2015.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh my God! And wait a minute. Let me. Kansas has the ball with 1:10 left, and they're about to pick up a 49-42 victory over Texas following an interception.
Wow.
Okay.
The 1-8 Kansas Jayhawks.
Oh man!
Are about to beat the 4-5 Texas Longhorns. After Texas get off to a 4-0 start or something this year?
Yes.
After a 4-0
start. Yeah, I know they got off
start,
to a 3-0.
Was it 3-0 or was it 4-0?
Well, I know they got off to 3-0. I didn't know that, it was 4-0 and then they lost. I know they lost, some games in a row. But
I know they lost it. I know they lost a game that they should have won, that it should have been a no-brainer, and then they ended up losing. And that's what started this entire skid. And now, wait a minute. No, Texas does get the ball back with 44 seconds left, so maybe they can do something here. But if Texas drops this, this may be the most humiliating loss of the season, because – you know, I said this stat to Lou earlier, and he had to make me do a double take to make sure I said this correctly. But in a span of 85 seconds, Kansas scored 3 touchdowns.
Yeah, doesn't surprise
Texas.
Me.
In a span of 85 seconds. Because there was a touchdown run, there was a touchdown pass, and then there was an interception returned all the way back for a touchdown. Yeah. Well, then again, I don't know how far out it was that the interception was, but it was from 2:25 left of the second quarter all the way down to 1 minute left of the second quarter.
Well, if you picked
and
Oklahoma State,
the,
it's a no-brainer there.
Let's see. Where is Oklahoma State? At TCU?
56-17.
Yeah, that's that should have been a no-brainer anyways. To begin. Well, that reminds me. I got to update the scoreboard when I get the chance. Never mind. Texas has – looks like they are about to tie this. 49-49 apiece, I think, because Texas just scored a touchdown. But can they get the conversion? Can they get the field goal, though? I don't know. But,
yeah.
3 touchdowns in 85 seconds for Kansas earlier tonight. But you know what, JB, let me get your thoughts on the John Gruden situation that Lou and I had discussed earlier, with John Gruden now officially suing both the league and Commissioner Roger Goodell for defamation of character as he feels
I glanced over that the other night, but I didn't read it.
Well, it's on. He's suing them on 6 counts, basically. Different counts that he's suing them on, and you know, Lou and I had discussed that maybe perhaps this might result in a whole bunch of stuff coming out about the league, a whole bunch of stuff that they may want to keep under wraps. And now with this stuff coming out, you know, the type of impact that it might potentially have on the league as a whole.
Yeah, I can see
what
that
happening. Thoughts? What are your thoughts, JB? Do you, I mean, obviously, you know, considering the stuff that Gruden is suing over, the fact that he feels he was targeted, that out of all the 650,000 emails that were recovered from the Washington football team, that supposedly his was the only one to be leaked out to the media, and that it has essentially ruined his entire NFL career. He probably will never coach ever again in the NFL, either as a coordinator or as a head coach. I mean, do you think that his lawsuit has any legs at all?
Just from what I read, I don't see him coming ahead. I don't see him getting anything.
No?
I don't think so.
I mean, it's kind of a surprise when you think about it, because, you know, how can the NFL refuse to, you know, normally when they do an investigation, you normally release the findings. The NFL has basically kept everything secret, all except the emails that were released about John Gruden, and also the fact that they even threatened the Raiders to expose that they were going to expose more emails unless something was done, and he got fired. So it seems to me like this was more of the NFL targeting Gruden in particular.
Yeah, now that you say, you know, saying it that way, yeah.
You know, with that kind of toxic environment that Washington has had for the last however many years, you mean to tell me that those emails were literally the only thing to come out of that investigation?
Yeah, now that I think about it, no. There's got to be more to it than that.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, it's
rethinking what I originally said.
You know, Lou and I talked about this earlier. This could be a potential major black eye. I mean, you know, obviously the NFL isn't going away regardless, but
no.
Could this potentially result in maybe a change of commissioner? The fact that, you know, now if they have to go into an investigation of the NFL, we're going to probably find out about a lot of stuff that's going on under wraps. Like, I don't know, their deal that they have with betting, with different betting organizations ever since sports betting became legal. I don't know, the potential rigging of certain games with how certain games are officiated. You know, there's potentially, if this ends up going through to discovery, because once it hits discovery, there's a lot of stuff that's going to come out, everything is going to come
shit
out.
Shit will hit the fan.
And maybe, perhaps, some of it might include the Washington, or not just the Washington football team, but maybe, perhaps, stuff that the NFL wants to keep under wraps.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, it could be, it definitely could be, what's the word I'm looking for? It could be not disastrous, but, well, kind of disastrous, but damaging to the NFL
yeah.
as a whole.
Yes.
And by the way, we are headed into overtime, 49-49 Kansas and Texas.
Wow.
Which means that Evan officially gets a point for his pick of the Kansas Jayhawks.
What
bad news for
that?
You, Lou. Oh, what? The game, it's on ESPNU.
Oh, okay. I don't get ESPNU.
Yeah.
But bad news for you, Lou, for Major League Baseball, according to Yankee General Manager Brian Cashman, said Thursday that Zach Britton is likely to miss the entire upcoming 2022 season.
I see.
With his Tommy John surgery.
Now, there was something I want to bring on baseball, saying how the Braves, you know, got the World Series, and everybody else, you know, is just bitching about it, saying how they just got away with it, saying like it was like a cancer type like move, how it was phrased. You know, the other players are happy. You know, look, I just look at it this way: the Braves made the right acquisitions at the right time. That's how they were able to win the World Series.
Exactly.
But with all this
You know, I've seen the bullshit stuff that's been put out there by Scott Boras, with him saying that it's the result of teams tanking and shit like that.
Tanking, come on.
Boras, obviously, he wants to do what's best for his players, for his respective players that he manages. But I mean, come on. You know, this year, you mean to tell me that the Atlanta Braves, their championship win is a result of teams like the Boston Red Sox, the Houston Astros, the LA Dodgers, the San Francisco Giants?
Yeah.
All the big teams that were in the playoffs this year, that Atlanta surpassing everybody is the result of tanking?
I don't think that's stupid.
I mean, granted, maybe I can understand.
Dumb.
I can understand maybe his point of view is the fact that LA and San Francisco had to face off against each other in the very first round. That's an immediate threat, removed right from the beginning. So maybe his argument is the fact that the Braves, you know, okay, they had to face, Milwaukee first before they ended up facing off against the Dodgers and then against the Astros. You know, maybe I can understand his argument there with the fact that, with the fact that. They didn't have to go against the Giants, for example, but I mean, that's just the whole aspect of the whole entire season itself and the playoff format. I don't think you can necessarily blame tanking for that.
No.
Uh-uh.
I mean, JB, you know, I don't think we had you on last week, did we?
No, I was wanting to go on, but I went to bed early, and I thought, well, you know, my alarm will, you know, go off and I'll, you know, talk for a little bit. But I must have slept. I think I what I did is put my telephone under me under my pillow, and I deleted the alarm in case I was you know, because I wasn't really feeling you know, too good, and I thought, well, you know, if I wake up, I'll call. If I don't, ah, well. And I think
right.
I woke up like about 10:59. I thought, there is no way I'm going to be able to get in.
Well, what are your thoughts on the Atlanta Braves Cinderella season and them get you know, winning the World Series like they did?
Well, I didn't watch the World Series, and I think it was one of those weeks where you said that you know, if Atlanta wins, they only have to, you know, win one more game. And I think the next game, the Astros won. I might be wrong.
Yeah,
and
took a 3-1 lead, and then they took a 3-1 lead, and then Astros won game 5 before the Braves won game 6.
Right. And with me, I don't even have any idea of, you know, when that even was. But I guess I was happy because the Braves were in the same league as the, you know, Reds. And I thought, hey, you know, go with the National League team. But I was happy that they won, really.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. You know, how many wins was it, Lou? 86?
Something around that.
I think it was something like 86 wins this year, and that team was able to win the World Series. It's exactly like you said, Lou, with all of the moves that they made this year. And keep in mind, they pretty much gave up next to nothing.
Yes.
for these acquisitions, all of the moves that they made. And yet, and they basically got premium talent for literally nothing. And keep in mind that a lot of those talents, I believe, actually won gold gloves this year. So, you know, clearly there's definitely... There's definitely a whatever they did this year when it came to, you know, when it came to managing their roster, if you can get premium talent without having to barely touch, you know, without having to barely touch your prospect pool, that is a win in and of itself. Let's see. Here we go. Here are the season standings. Now it was 88 wins. They were 88-73 this year.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's obvious. You know, they won the NL East because let's face it, Philadelphia sucks, New York sucks, Miami sucks, and Washington sucks. So
It wasn't
a shocker that they made the playoffs. I think the biggest shocker was the fact that they were without Ronald Acuña Jr. They lost Charlie Morton. They lost Charlie Morton in game one with a fractured leg. And by the way, keep in mind, I still think it's very impressive that he struck out two batters after fracturing that leg. There was a lot of stuff that seemingly went wrong in Atlanta, but yet all of a sudden they just had a complete resurgence. And actually, let me check. Apart from San Francisco and L.A., they were third in the National League in run differential with 134 runs. 134 runs more scored more than they allowed. So, you know, whatever they did, it definitely worked. And, I mean, obviously. Okay, maybe – you know, maybe with teams at better health, okay, maybe we don't see an Atlanta Braves World Series win. But to say that teams won or that Atlanta won because other teams tanked, I don't think that's an accurate assessment.
Buy that either.
No. Because you take a look at all the teams that were in the playoffs this year. You have San Francisco. You have L.A. You have Milwaukee. You have St. Louis. Granted, they were wild card, but I'll still consider them a playoff team. You have Atlanta. You have Atlanta. You have Houston. You have Chicago, the White Sox, that is. You have Tampa Bay. You got Boston, and you got New York. You know, either one of those teams could have possibly beaten them in the World Series. Hell, I picked Houston to win the World Series.
Yeah.
Before the World Series officially began, when we did the poll in Sports Whispers, I had picked Houston to win over Atlanta. Because looking at how the two teams matched up, I just did not see how Atlanta could outslug Houston. But lo and behold, Atlanta, I couldn't really look at Houston's two games that they won and say that the series was close. I mean, it was either Houston blows out Atlanta or Atlanta blows out Houston. You know, there wasn't really a close game in the series at all.
Right.
And the fact that they did it without their best offensive contributor in Ronald Acuña Jr., you know, I think that speaks a lot for the team. So to say that they only won because of tanking?
No, uh-uh.
I mean, I just don't buy that at all.
No, neither do I.
I mean, it could be something here as well too, because you know, this is the first, or maybe the. Well, I shouldn't say the first or the last, but you know, who knows if there's going to be a season next year because of the looming lockout that's currently encompassing the league. And from all indications, from what I've heard, negotiations aren't going that well between the league and the Players Association. So.
No.
It sounds like we could be headed for a lengthy lockout.
Yeah.
From what it sounds like.
Yeah, I don't like to hear that.
Case, and you know, as I stated last week, Lou,
yes.
If anybody's gonna budge, it's gonna be the league. It's not going to be it's not going to be the Players Association, because Tony Clark isn't the type of executive that's going to budge. Now, the one thing we could potentially see here, we could potentially see some teams move quickly once the deadline opens up, or once a free agency officially opens up here.
Yes.
Because with the deadline approaching for December, it's very likely that there probably isn't going to be first off, there's probably not going to be a winter meetings. So teams right now actually are probably doing their doing their communications with free agents right now. And according to Jeff Passan of ESPN, there's a sense that top free agents Corey Seager, Marcus Semien, and a few prominent starting pitchers could come off the board while the current CBA is still in play. Similarly, some in the industry expect that at least some of the offseason's most aggressive teams could be highly active in the days and hours leading up to the current CBA's expiration date.
Right.
And obviously the biggest market that is currently in demand is the shortstop market, with Marcus Semien, Corey Seager, Carlos Correa, a whole bunch of shortstops potentially being on the move. So don't be shocked at all if there's a lot of action prior to December 1st. And assuming there is indeed a lockout,
in the right direction.
You don't think?
I think the lockout is looking more and more likely now.
Yeah.
I think the bigger question would be how long of a lockout.
Now that's a story altogether. Like I said, I don't think that it'll be that stupid to have it go a whole season without baseball.
Especially, we brought up this point last week. They risk potentially pissing off their media or their partners that they had just signed a new media rights agreement with. All of those rights that they had signed with all the different networks, you risk pissing off all of those networks.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see if there is a lockout, just exactly how long of a lockout we're looking at here. Because depending on how long it might be, it could have a pretty drastic effect, especially with, like we said, the sport is trying to get more kids involved with baseball and wanting to potentially become baseball players. This is an update here. It looks like Freddie Freeman and the Braves are growing further apart in negotiations. So it looks like Freddie Freeman may be headed someplace else out of Atlanta. Freeman supposedly wants 6 years at $200 million. And the Braves' best offer so far has been 5 years at $135 million, which is obviously far short of his asking price.
How much was he asking for?
6 years, $200 million.
Uh-huh.
6 years, $200 million, and they counter back with 5 years, $135 million. Some other bits of news. I forgot to mention this, by the way. Ben Roethlisberger will miss tomorrow's game against the Lions due to COVID-19. So he is officially out. I don't know if it's said whether he's vaccinated. I don't know if it's said whether he's vaccinated or not, but if he isn't vaccinated, he will probably miss next week as well.
He is vaccinated.
Okay. Oh, okay. So it's only 10 days then, I think. Oh wait, then he might miss next week anyways. Or no, he needs two negative tests in a row, I believe it is.
24 hours apart.
Yeah, 24 hours apart, yeah. Which is exactly why Nick Chubb isn't playing this week.
Right.
Also, the Tennessee Titans, they have placed star wide receiver Julio Jones on injured reserve with a hamstring issue. So he will be out at least the next 3 weeks. For that Titans offense. Let's see. Some Major League Baseball news. J.D. Martinez has elected to not opt out of his contract with the final year with the Red Sox. So he will officially opt in for the remainder of his deal, and he will make $19.35 million this year for the Boston Red Sox after hitting .286 with a league-leading 42 doubles, or American League leading, to go with 28 home runs and 99 RBIs for the Boston Red Sox this season. Which is weird because a lot of people thought that he would probably opt out, considering there would probably be a lot of teams that would offer him at least 3 years on the current market. The San Francisco Giants, they signed manager Gabe Kapler to a 2-year contract extension, which will put him with the team through the 2024 season. After guiding the Giants to an astonishing 107 regular season wins and their first NL West division title since 2012. However, they were ultimately beaten by their longtime rival LA Dodgers in Game 5 of the NLDS last month. He had initially inked a 3-year deal prior to the pandemic-shortened 2020 season. However, he has led the Giants to a stellar 136-86 record over his first 2 seasons at the helm in San Francisco. Let's see. The Yankees did lose one player, though, as the Dodgers and Andrew Heaney were in agreement on a 1-year contract worth more than $8 million. Actually, multiple others have reported that the deal was worth $8.5 million. Technically, it is his second stint with the Dodgers, as he was acquired from the Marlins back in 2014. Before he immediately got flipped to the Anaheim Angels, or the LA Angels of Anaheim.
Yeah.
Although I guess maybe the Yankees won't really miss him that much, as he boasted a 5.83 ERA in between the Angels and the Yankees. But still, the first loss for the Yankees this offseason. And also, it's been reported as well that maybe it might be the end of Brett Gardner in a Yankee uniform.
I believe it is. I believe it is official.
As supposedly there are no plans to bring him back. So who knows? It's possible that the one Yankee player that everybody has been wishing could leave at some point here may be done, at least as a player, with the New York Yankees at the age of 38. And he's been with the seasons, or he's been with the team his entire career, I believe, since 2008, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, something like that.
Yes.
And actually, they're talking that he may possibly retire and become the first base coach. From what I've read. So, I don't know, though. But let's see. The Red Sox, they declined both options on... Ooh. Hang on just a second.
Yes.
Final in overtime. Kansas 57, Texas 56, with a two-point conversion by Kansas to massively upset the Texas Longhorns.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
They lost to somebody earlier in the season, didn't they?
Yes.
Texas?
Yeah, I thought they did.
I thought they did too.
Well, yeah, I think they've lost their last six games, actually. Hang on. Let me get the schedule up. I'll get the schedule up here. They have actually only two games left. But let's see. So, yeah, I know. I have the locker, I know. Let's see. So, they opened up the season with a loss at Arkansas. They did win against Rice. Then they won against Texas Tech. Then they won against TCU. They then dropped the next four games to Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Baylor, and Iowa State before dropping today's game to Kansas.
Yeah, and they lost big time to Iowa State.
Yeah. Yeah, 30-7. 30-7. They lost to Baylor 31-24. They lost to Oklahoma State 32-24. They lost to Oklahoma 55-48. Now, considering how badly this is now, imagine once they officially – I don't think – are they officially in the SEC? I don't think they're officially in the SEC yet.
I want to say they are, but I'm not sure.
I don't think they are yet.
So imagine, considering how bad they are right now, what's going to happen once they move over to the SEC officially.
Yeah.
Texas is going to get their asses whooped in the SEC. They're going to basically be Vanderbilt, essentially. Or no, I shouldn't say that. That's a little too low of a jab. They're basically going to be
Missouri,
Tennessee. Tennessee or Missouri are probably a better comparison. They're going to basically be like Tennessee or Missouri. So, you know, it's not gonna be a pretty picture at all for
in the
Texas.
In the way Texas is playing this season, I actually think the Bearcats could beat them.
Maybe they could.
Possibly, as long as the Bearcats don't have a massive choke game like they did with their offense. you know, if their offense actually shows up, maybe perhaps they can beat the Longhorns.
Yeah, I think there was a couple games where you know, it was close, even though they won. It might have been like a 26-20 win or something like that. I forget.
There was a couple of games where their offense got exposed.
Yeah.
Much like Iowa, except the difference is Cincinnati won where Iowa lost.
And I'm glad that they actually didn't put Cincinnati at number two, because put Cincinnati at number two, Cincinnati is not going to beat anybody in the top, I don't want to say anybody. You know, they don't have a chance at hardly anybody in the top 10.
No. By the way, guys, we have a couple of upsets. We have a couple of upsets here. Baylor 27-14 over Oklahoma. Number 13 over number 8. And we have Ole Miss over Texas A&M, number 15 over number 11, by a score of 29-19.
I actually picked Texas A&M, too.
A lot of people did.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
But, looks like Oklahoma, who knows, they may fall out of the top 10 possibly now. But let's see, a couple of other finals from today. Georgia, they continued their dominance, 41-17 over Tennessee. Alabama completely whooped New Mexico State, 59-3. Ohio State, 59-31 over Purdue. We had Michigan, 21-17 over Penn State. Wow, Penn State isn't even ranked anymore. State rebounds with a 40-21 victory over Maryland. Notre Dame 28-3 over Virginia.
Yeah.
Let's see, we got Mississippi State upsetting Auburn 43-34, unranked Mississippi State. Wisconsin whooped Northwestern 35-7. Iowa over Minnesota 27-22. Wow, how bad is Iowa? The fact that they were they ranked at one point this year? Number 3, I think, or number 2?
I think so.
And they fell all the way to number 20. I mean, that tells you how badly they were exposed. That just tells you how badly they were exposed. The fact that you know, they suffered so many losses that they at one point were in contention for the college football playoff, and then all of a sudden completely fell apart. Now I believe the next update is what, tomorrow? I think so. Yeah. So we'll see if any changes are made. Probably not, but we'll see if any changes are made to the top 4, or technically top 6, I guess. But top 4 end up making it into the actual football playoff. Considering Alabama, Georgia, and Ohio State both won, and Oregon is currently up 14-7 over Washington State. Assuming Oregon doesn't get upset here, we're probably looking at the same 4 teams more than likely.
Yeah.
But if Oregon does lose, maybe that opens the door for Cincinnati, because they're currently sitting at number 5.
Well, Cincinnati does, you know, I said it, what, a month ago? Cincinnati, you know, when Cincinnati was number two, I said Cincinnati does not deserve to be number two. I don't care how good they are. They don't deserve to be in the number two spot. And after, even after last week's win, I was glad that they, you know, moved them down like the, what, sixth or something like that.
In the college football poll, yeah, in the college football playoff rankings, they're fifth.
Because Notre Dame is seventh, and that is the only big. That's
no
the
Notre
only
Dame is
big...
ninth. Oh wait a minute, that's the AP poll. Never mind, you're talking about the AP poll.
Maybe
that's
right,
yeah.
The only. I think after Cincinnati beat Notre Dame, you know, that's when they shot them up.
Yeah.
Say, like, whoa, you beat Notre Dame, and that's like the only big win this season.
Yeah, and they've basically been sitting at number two ever since they beat Notre Dame.
And they haven't played anybody, and they don't play anybody for the rest of the year.
Yeah. It's mainly because of record, and that's honestly, I think that's honestly what's keeping them out of, you know, out of the top four right now, is the fact that they don't really play anybody, period.
Right. I mean, you can have Alabama lose 3 and 4 games. Alabama's going to whoop the living crap out of Cincinnati. I don't care.
Sure. Yeah, but Alabama's only loss was to what, Texas A&M this year, I think?
I think it was. One of those.
And
it was a very close loss.
It was
a league game.
It was like,
I know.
Yeah, it was a very close loss, too, from what I recall. So,
yeah.
I mean, I don't really argue with them putting Alabama and Georgia and Alabama 1 and 2. I don't really argue with that because, I mean, Alabama, you know, they're going to be Alabama regardless of, you know, how many wins or losses they have. So, I mean, obviously, you know, if they had two losses, you know, they wouldn't be in the top four. But I think Alabama and Georgia are definite locks for the college football playoff. Oregon and Ohio State could potentially slide down still. But,
and I haven't seen who Ohio State plays the rest of the season.
Let's see. I can tell you right now, actually. They have a meeting with Michigan State next week, and they finish off with Michigan on Thanksgiving week. So they got two gigantic matchups ahead.
Yeah, and those are two league games, too.
Yes. Number seven, Michigan State, and number six, Michigan. So those could essentially go either way.
Yes.
Well, in my opinion, at least.
Yeah.
But, anyways, you know, that's pretty much we're gonna wrap it up for tonight. We have about like 2 minutes left. Lou and JB, thank you guys for joining me tonight. For those who haven't done so, if you haven't subscribed to the Missy AE podcast, you can do so by going to blogtalkradio.com/MissyAE. You can also find us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, and Amazon Music. Feel free, if you're a Survivor fan, to call in next Thursday or this upcoming Thursday night for another edition of the Survivor 41 recap show, where we will dive into everything that goes on this upcoming week. Obviously, for Sports Whispers Weekly, we will be back next Saturday night for another edition of Sports Whispers Weekly, where we'll talk nothing but sports for the full 3 hours or for as long as my phone will allow me to stay on the air. But yeah, everybody have a good rest of your weekend, and yeah, we will catch you guys for Sports Whispers Weekly next Saturday night,
guys.
Yeah, good luck. Good luck to everybody in Games Gridiron as well, because after last week, I think people are firing back this week, or when it comes to the games and the games gamble. But yeah, everybody have a good rest of your week, and we will see you guys next week.